This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. California's governor has filed an emergency request for a federal judge to stop the deployment of federal troops to Los Angeles. President Trump deploying the National Guard and Marines after protests against immigration raids turned violent. He blamed California's governor for the unrest. ABC's Alex Stone is in L.A.
President Trump told reporters that he talked to Governor Gavin Newsom on Monday and told him he's doing a bad job. Newsom's office tells ABC News the president did not call the governor yesterday. Newsom on social media saying he did not get a phone call from the president or even a voicemail from him.
In London, high-level talks will continue between the U.S. and China with renewed hopes that a trade deal can be reached. It comes as the World Bank is out with its forecast, saying President Trump's tariffs are expected to slow economic growth this year in the U.S. and around the globe. Severe storms leaving a trail of destruction in the south and northeast with heavy winds, tornadoes, and even flooding. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Governor Evers announces a tourism hat trick in Wisconsin with the third record-breaking year in a row. Wisconsin Department of Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers said the state's tourism industry brought in a record-high $25.8 billion in total economic impact in 2024. This surpassed the previous year's record of $25 billion. This year's tourism hat trick includes a record-breaking amount of state and local revenue, a record-breaking 114.4 million visitors, and a record-high economic impact for tourism. The Trump administration argues that charges should not be dropped against a Wisconsin judge indicted for allegedly helping a man who is in the country evade U.S. immigration agents seeking to arrest him in her courthouse. Attorneys for the U.S. Department of Justice urged a federal judge on Monday to reject a motion filed by Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Hannah Dugan seeking to dismiss the charges against her. Justice Department attorneys say dropping the charges would be unprecedented and allow judges to be above the law. A motion hearing in the Chippewa Falls Lily Peters homicide has been rescheduled. The Chippewa County judge in the case had an illness necessitating the Monday hearing be rescheduled for a later date. That comes just days after the court ruled to seal records on behalf of a 17-year-old defendant, Carson Peters Berger. Court documents show Judge Stephen Gibbs granted a motion to seal the transcript of the investigator's interview recording with Peters Berger, as well as a flash drive containing a video of the interview. Only attorneys and the defendant can have access. The Wisconsin Court of Appeals previously ruled that Peters Berger will be tried in adult court. He was 15 when 10-year-old Lily Peters was killed in April 2022. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
Brewers try to rebound. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball tonight at AmFam Field, where the Brewers host the Braves in Game 2 of their series. Quinn Priester on the mound for Milwaukee against the Braves right-hander Grant Holmes. The Brewers losing last night 7-1. The team making some roster moves today, sending reliever Grant Anderson down to Nashville and recalling right-hand pitcher Easton McGee. NFL Packers minicamp underway. I asked GM Brian Gutekunst why couldn't they hang on to defensive back Jaire Alexander when they still have $46 million left under the salary cap.
I think, you know, over the last 4 years, you know, there's been a lot of games missed. And I just think for what that amount of money is, I think that's a lot to pay for a guy who hasn't been able to get out on the field. Like, it's not his fault, just something that kind of transpired. We're looking for something different.
Today, the Packers moved Bo Melton from wide receiver to defensive back.
Again, his play on special teams. It's just you don't have too many wideouts in this league that are as effective as he is on teams.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur with Sports on Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy and milder tonight with a low in the low 60s. For Wednesday, increasing clouds, chance of showers in the afternoon and evening. High in the mid 80s. Shower chances continue on Thursday. With more clouds, cooler highs, mid 70s. It's 74 right now.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
This is for people who watched me anchoring the news at Channel 13. My last day at TV 13 was 20 years ago yesterday.
Oh, I'm old now, too.
Well, yeah, that was my whole point.
Pat, I was, too, when you stopped working at TV.
That's what I get all the time now is people come up and they go, oh, were you on TV? I'm like, yeah. And then I go, don't say it. I watched you when I was a little kid. I'm like, yikes.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
Congressman Mark Pocan is here. Are you planning on going out on the road again, having a couple more town halls?
Yes. No, Claire, Derek and I have been invited by Opportunity Wisconsin, so I'm really looking forward to debating Derek. My guess is it's more likely I will sprout a head full of hair than he will show up. This is important to let people know what's in this bill because there is a very good reason why Republicans are hiding from town halls.
Catch Matt Nair on air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Jay Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, it's a new way to teach kids math. Maybe Greg and I will learn how to add. Also, Rich Smith from the 6th Street Theater will be here. Join us.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. News from the Center, WRCE.
That is what our framers intended, and I don't care if it's your team winning today, it won't always be that way. So what in the heck are they doing?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Are you kidding me?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I think that speaks to Wisconsinites in a really special way that I've been to 15 baseball stadiums. It ain't the same in other places.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I am not Maggie Dawn. I am not a lawyer or economist. I am a humble organizer and executive director, joined by my friends, Dan Schaefer with the Recombobulation Area and Matt Rothschild and State Representative Darren Madison, which before the break, we were talking about our joint op-ed in the Recombobulation Area that came out yesterday, talking about some things that we wanted to see in the next chair. And to pick up on some of that, I think what for us was important is being able to convey that we need leadership that is going to meet this moment. People are hurt. There were fractures, big fractures between Gaza and immigration and even how folks view policing and the role of policing. There's so many fractions that how is leadership going to bring folks together in order to unite folks to meet this moment? But in order to do that, you also have to understand that in order to be a big tent party, you also have to be able to listen and to mm-hmm. not push out people that you deem extreme or far left. That is not the that's not the way out, in our opinion.
Yeah. And Ben Wickler, I feel like one of his strengths as a chair was, and you know, people will always talk about like his fundraising or like, you know, different things like that. I think he was a good listener. Is that a fair characterization?
I would say that. As someone that had monthly check-in calls with him and we talked about things that was legally allowable, there were times where out of a 30-minute call, 20 to 25 minutes is just me talking about all the things that I think the Democratic Party is doing wrong. And he, every month, shout out to him, took that in stride and always ended the call with, thanks, Angela. This always gives me helpful perspective and I appreciate our calls together. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be full of dynamics that are full of tension. He listened. Whether he fully agreed as an individual is beside the point, mm-hmm. but he listened to me.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important for the next chair. I mean, you and Darren outlined so much here about what you want to see from the next chair from a variety of different levels and perspectives here. But I think that listening component is a really important one.
Yeah.
And another thing you underlined, both of you, that I think was crucial is respecting the grassroots organizing, respecting what's going on at the grassroots, and being clear on the issues about what the Democratic Party actually stands for. And one thing that I also think is crucial at this moment, especially, is a Democratic Party chair who can communicate. Yeah. We need people who can communicate really clearly right now, because as Dan was mentioning, you know, this is bigger than just Wisconsin. Wisconsin's going to be on the national map.
Yeah.
And Lord knows the head of the DNC nationally is quiet as a mouse right now while the whole country's, you know, in crisis. you know,
don't get me started.
I wish Ben Whitler won that. He wouldn't have been quiet and hiding in a closet like Ken Martin is. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
We need someone who can frame and speak, articulate what's going on in this country, the risks that we're facing, and the defiance that we're gonna bring here in Wisconsin with our great progressive tradition that we have here.
Absolutely.
Hey, no, and you hit the nail on the head, right? There's been a consistent message from folks from local county parties, and grassroots groups like Rural Progressives, as well as groups like Grassroots North Shore, Milwaukee, and so on, that have been like, dude, we've tried tremendously, and we want to see a chair. And folks who work directly with us and listen to our perspectives when they come and do organizing in our communities alongside us, right? Which is why a lot of the folks who are running for Wisconsin Dems chair are talking about the role that they need to play in uplifting county parties.
So let me ask you, Darren, I don't like to say I'm playing devil's advocate, but, you know, let's go into it. I think some might say, Darren is a part of the Socialist Caucus. Why is he invested, or why did he write this piece with Angela? Why is the Socialist Caucus, or someone that is self-proclaimed socialist, invested in the next WISDEMS chair?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I am very much so a socialist. I'm also a member of the Democratic Party. I used to be on the executive committee for the Milwaukee County Dems. I've helped a lot of Dems get elected historically, from my predecessor to, our county executive when he first ran for state representative, alongside a bunch of local leaders, right? I ran as a socialist because I felt my values and communities were rooted in the ideology of socialism, but there's no socialist party that exists in the nation. And I feel that, a lot of folks in the Democratic Party have core socialist values, which, mm-hmm. Folks don't like to talk about, but it is true, right? And Wisconsin has a long legacy of a history of socialism.
Yeah.
But as it relates to the importance of the Wisconsin Dems chair's race and why I felt it important to weigh in, it's because, again, I'm going to be in the, I'm still a part of the Dem caucus in the legislature, and I still show up in Dem spaces all the time. And I want to ensure that that the party thrives, and I want to ensure that the folks on the left aren't left behind, because we care about a lot of the same things. We want to live in safe communities. We want to ensure that folks have access to living wage jobs. We want to ensure folks have access to quality health care, right? And we want healthy, thriving public schools. These are all, socialist values. So, and I want our chair to understand that, the future of the party cannot leave votes on the table, and it can't leave folks on the sidelines. We are all needed to fight for our justice.
And you're not the only member of the Wisconsin Socialist Caucus, right? Like this is a growing piece of
friends.
The Wisconsin State Legislature. There is a significant presence of Democratic Socialists in Milwaukee.
Yep.
I personally would not include myself in the Democratic Socialist Caucus or anything like that. But I also think they have to be part of the big tent.
Yes.
If Democrats are going to be part of the big tent party, I think you have to bring in a variety of different groups with a variety of different priorities under that big tent.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're kind of going against your own values, right?
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's part of the points that we were trying to make, too, is that that is on the responsibility of the party. You can't just outsource that type of organizing to be like, well, we don't want to talk to those controversial Black people, so we're just going to assume that Bloc is going to carry and maintain that relationship on our behalf. And that is also incredibly dangerous and not smart or strategic at all. Yeah, go ahead, Matt. What do you got?
And also, and Representative Madison made a real strong point here, because you also need to present a vision.
Yeah.
And whether you call it a democratic socialist vision, whether you call it a Robert LaFalle progressive vision, you need to give people a vision of what the party stands for and what you're going to offer people. How are you going to solve people's day-to-day problems?
Right.
And how you see Wisconsin and this country moving out of this phase. I mean, I'm an old democratic socialist myself, putting my cards on the table here. I mean, and, you know, capitalism's devouring our democracy, if I can say.
Mm-hmm.
And fascism is an outgrowth of capitalism when capitalism isn't delivering the goods to people. We've seen this throughout the 20th century, and we're seeing it right now in front of us. And there's something wrong with the system. The system doesn't deliver the goods to people, and the super rich are buying the politicians left and right. Mm-hmm. And so people aren't getting what they need. And so I'm kind of thrilled that there is a Democratic Socialist Caucus here in Wisconsin. And so, Representative Madison, my hat's off to you.
Well, you touched on something important there, too. And I think it is important for the party in this pivotal kind of like transition moment to not just be the party that's not Trump.
Right.
You have to be more
that's
than
not
just not Trump
yeah.
or not Ron Johnson or not whoever Republican is running for governor.
Don't they want to have a right? higher standard for themselves anyways?
I think this is part of what needs to come next as the Democratic Party passes the torch to a new generation of leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Hint, hint.
Hint, hint.
Another column that we're going to be talking about coming up next here. But I think this is part of what Democrats need to do is offer their vision for what they would do if they were in power.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't happen enough.
No, precisely. I mean, you know, if you look at a lot of the fundraising emails and other efforts that have happened over the past year, right, they've been consistently messaging what are the problems that you know, Trump has been leading on and how Democrats are fighting against it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead
and
of
that's
saying,
important, too, right? You have to meet this moment and meet this, you know, ridiculous trampling of the Constitution that's happening from the Trump administration. You have to be a real opposition party, but you also have to provide a platform that people can believe in and
mm-hmm.
have hope in.
Mm-hmm.
Precisely. I mean, I think consistently about, you know, the dynamics that that particularly my family navigates, right? Whenever I'm thinking about how to ensure that messaging is reaching the core of folks, I go to my mom. My mom does not care for politics. The circumstances she's lived under are the same under Trump and have been the same under other presidencies and other electeds, whether they be Dem, Republican, Socialists, or so on. So I try and talk to my mom and get her perspective on what she wants, what she cares about, and talk about messaging from that she can find accessible because she never graduated from high school. She was raised in Mississippi and raised on a farm, right?
Mm.
So if she can resonate with messaging, my messaging can reach other folks in a way that makes sense. I think we need to, as a party, think about how we message to the folks who are disengaged and living under the circumstances that, you know, that have existed before the Trump administration and may exist after, and how to move us forward in a way that makes sense.
Very quickly.
Really important about how, you know, how we talk to, you know, our relatives, how we talk to our neighbors and you know, we got to have that vision. We got to say how we're going to make everybody's life, their lives better in some concrete terms.
That was going to be my question. It was like, exactly, what is that? What is that vision? How do we, you know, explain that to people? Because I think some folks feel so disillusioned by both parties that, you know, Darren and I are hoping to add some, you know, wisdom and some gems to the dialogue about how Dems can be showing up in this moment. It's just a matter of, are folks willing to listen?
Well, the piece is out there. It's at the Recombobulation Area from Angela Lang, award-winning columnist at the Recombobulation Area, Angela Lang, with State Representative Darren Madison. The piece is called A Message for the Next Chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Go check it out now. It's available in full for free at the Recombobulation Area.
And right after we come back, we will be getting into Dan's piece called Pass the Torch. Tony Evers should not run for a third term as governor. We would love to have listeners call. So 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And we will take your calls on the other side of the break.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Why'd I go to the doctor? My heart would race just taking my son to practice. It didn't feel right. So I got checked out. Turns out I have atrial fibrillation, which increases the risk of stroke about 5 times.
Symptoms like irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness can come and go. But if it's AFib, the risk of stroke remains. If you have symptoms, contact a doctor.
I'm so glad I did.
Visit notimetowait.com. Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In a highly controversial action, President Trump is testing the reach of his powers by sending 4,700 military personnel into Los Angeles to suppress protests. What are Title 10, the Insurrection Act, and the Posse Comitatus Act? The Posse Comitatus Act forbids the use of the military to enforce laws against U.S. citizens under ordinary situations, but there are extremely rare exceptions. In his mobilization of the California National Guard and active duty Marines, Trump invoked Title 10, a statute enabling the U.S. Armed Forces. Section 251 says, whenever there is an insurrection in any state against its government, the president may, upon the request of its legislature or of its governor if the legislature cannot be convened, call into federal service such of the militia of the other states in the number requested by that state and use such of the armed forces as he considers necessary to suppress the insurrection. No such request was made by state officials. Under the Insurrection Act, the American Constitution Center notes 3 circumstances where a president may use the military on U.S. soil. When a local official asks for assistance, when an insurrection against the federal government or judiciary occurs, or when a state refuses to uphold civil rights. What constitutes an insurrection? That will likely be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. Find more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I am filling in for Maggie. My name is Angela Lang with my guest co-host Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area and our friend Matt Rothschild. And we've been having a really good conversation. I feel like, as always, we're always covering a lot of ground. Actually, we have a couple texts that came in. Matt, you want to read some of the feedback we've been getting?
Sure. Ross from Crawford County says, excellent conversation, guys. Thanks for talking about this fascist Trump administration and what it's doing and the impact here in Wisconsin. Nancy from Madison, we need to continue to support Governor Evers. This is for you, Dan, to run for another term. I don't see a Democrat in the wings who would win. It's also unlikely Dems will take the Assembly or Senate. Evers is the only one to stop the Republicans. So there's that. And I knew that would be coming.
No, I knew that would be coming. Absolutely.
So look at that transition.
Yeah, there we go.
Dan, you wrote a piece.
I wrote a piece.
You write many pieces.
But I write many pieces, but I wrote a piece that I've been working on for quite a while. I published it today at the Recombobulation area. The title of the piece is Pass the Torch. Tony Evers should not run for a third term as governor. So I have a number of different arguments that are within this, but mm-hmm. I guess we'll start here. I think Tony Evers has been a good governor.
Yeah, that's how you start the piece. Yeah.
I think he has been, you could even argue he's been great.
Yeah.
Like considering the circumstances that have surrounded his time in office. But I think at a certain point, all things must pass.
Mm-hmm.
And Evers is 73 years old. He will turn 75 in November of 2026. I happen to know this because I found out that we have the same birthday, November 5th. So he will.
Oh, yeah. Your election day birthday.
My election day birthday. Yeah.
Oh,
last year,
sorry.
Not my favorite, but that's okay. That's not what we're talking about here. Also, Cavalier Johnson, another November 5th birthday. Three Wisconsin lefties
Good morning.
With the same November 5th birthday. But anyway.
Lefty. lefties.
Yeah, something like that. But I think Evers has been a good governor. Mm-hmm. He has served this state well for two terms. But I think at a certain point, you have to pass the torch. And I think after everything that happened with Joe Biden in the run-up to the 2024 election, the debate, the dropout, everything that else that happened in connection to that, how can we not be having this conversation right now? How can we overlook the factor that is, you know, part of this conversation and part of what Democrats have done more broadly is I think Democrats in particular have had such a major problem mm-hmm. with passing the torch to the next generation of leaders. You know, in 2007 and 2008 during Barack Obama's rise, I think we all thought that this was the beginning of something different and that this was Democrats were the party of the future. I don't think there's a lot of people out there saying that about the party right now.
That's a good point.
And I think, you know, there are comparisons that I make in the piece to between Tony Evers and Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. There's not a direct one-to-one comparison to be made here. Joe Biden is, you know, almost a decade older than Tony Evers. Mm-hmm. He was far less popular than Tony Evers. Yeah. And he talked about being a bridge candidate to the next generation, alluded to being a one-term president in so many ways. So this is not a one-to-one comparison.
I mean, they both like ice cream, though.
They both like ice cream. There are a lot of the Venn diagram of Evers and Biden includes things. No, some overlap beyond just ice cream.
And I would say, that's a good point, though. You're not just trying to say, oh, he's old like Biden. Like, that's not what this piece is really the focus of.
No, but I think at a certain point, you have to pass the torch to the next generation of leaders. And I think there is a capable bench that Wisconsin Democrats have that been building. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, more important than that, I think we also need to have a real primary.
Sure.
You know, I think Democrats, to their detriment, have avoided primaries in the past. I think obviously with Harris, that was, you know, such a weird circumstance. It's hard to really be all that upset about it. It wasn't, it was an acceptable scenario, but it was not a particularly good one. And so I think we'd be better served by having a primary, by having the voters decide. I think that also would have been the case in the 2022 Senate primary here in Wisconsin, when all the candidates dropped out at the last minute to endorse Mandela Barnes. I think there's this iron sharpens iron quality that can come from these primaries. And then I think, too, it has to be, you know, I think there might be candidates I'd like more than others who would be in a potential field. But I think that doesn't matter, because I think what ultimately matters is that the voters need to be the ones to decide, not the party bosses, not Evers himself, even, you know, endorsing who might be a successor. But I think we need to have an actual primary. And I think to pass the torch and to have this future decided by the voters and not by you know, some sort of party elites or something like that.
I totally agree with you on the need for primaries. You know, I think certainly I still, on the Biden thing, I'm still rankled by the fact that A, the reporters in Washington who must have known didn't let us know, unless you're listening to Fox, and B, you know, Newsom could have gotten in the race. Whitmer could have gotten in the race. They could have challenged Biden. I mean, so many people must have known. I don't buy this that he was just sheltered by his handlers, because, you know, I was getting feedback in 2021 that he was not all there. And if I knew in Madison, Wisconsin, tell me the reporters in Washington didn't know.
Well, so it's good to air out. I think Democrats are underestimating how much damage that did to the party at large. I think they're totally underestimating the credibility question that brought, because it's just like, it's this logic question. It's just like, well, if they were lying about that, what else were they lying about? What else weren't they telling this truth about? And if you are running a campaign based on honesty and integrity while asking people to deny the evidence of their eyes and ears, that's a real problem. And so I think
they weren't listening to the people. A vast majority of Democrats didn't want Biden to run again, and they just forced it down our throat until it was impossible.
We are just starting this conversation. We are going to continue this conversation after the break, and we would love to have you all call in 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We will pick up this conversation right on the other side.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. June is Dairy Month in the United States, a time dedicated to honoring the contributions of the dairy industry and the hardworking individuals behind it. Locally, excitement is growing across Crawford County as several community events are planned to mark the occasion. The month-long celebration shines a spotlight on dairy farmers and others involved in the production and distribution of dairy products. It also promotes the nutritional value of dairy and encourages families to enjoy milk, cheese, and other dairy items as part of a healthy lifestyle. Locally, the annual June Dairy Day celebration in Soldiers Grove will return on Father's Day weekend, offering a blend of family-friendly entertainment, food, and recognition for the dairy community. A major feature of this year's festivities will be the first-ever Crawford County Coronation Banquet, set for Monday, June 16th at the Eastman United Methodist Fellowship Hall. This new event will honor incoming royalty, including the county's Fairest of the Fair, Junior Fairest of the Fair, Dairy Princess, and Little Miss Squirt. The evening will begin at 6 with a cheese and cracker social and a chance to meet the contestants. Displays highlighting the past year of the outgoing royalty will also be available. A homemade dinner prepared by the Eastman United Methodist Church will follow at 7, along with remarks from a guest speaker currently holding a statewide pageant title. Crawford County's celebration of National Dairy Month is shaping up to be both festive and meaningful, showcasing community pride and continued support for the dairy industry. The bridge connecting Wisconsin to Iowa is now open. After being closed on May 17th, the Iowa Department of Transportation said the 94-year-old Lansing Bridge was open as of 10 Monday morning. In an update on Monday, Iowa DOT officials said after inspection and engineering review, the bridge is safe to cross. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Peach Wabba. Lilo and Stitch is still the box office champ. The biggest hit of the summer so far pulled in $32 million last weekend and is now pushing $800 million globally at the box office. The film is showing some great gams with only a 50% drop despite being in its third week of release. The number two spot goes to From the World of John Wick, Ballerino, which brought in a less than expected $26 million in its opening weekend and $51 million globally. The eighth installment of Mission Impossible saw only a 45% drop in its third week of release. Final Reckoning is currently at $450 million globally. Karate Kid Legends brought in $8.5 million to come in fourth place, and gruesome horror film Final Destination Bloodlines continues to show incredible staying power by coming in fifth place and pulling in $6.5 million in its fourth week. The film has now pulled in $250 million worldwide. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy and milder tonight with a low in the low 60s. For Wednesday, increasing clouds, chance of showers in the afternoon and evening. High in the mid 80s. Shower chances continue on Thursday. With more clouds, cooler highs, mid 70s.
Currently at 75 degrees.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Positive psychology coach Kira Sabin. It is great to have you back.
I love the idea of self-help, but there's also something called community help. We have become so divided. We've forgotten that our neighbor is really nice and makes great cookies and probably yes. has the same concerns on a daily basis that you do. I think that we think things have changed, and I think we're just have stopped talking to each other.
Catch The Todd Albaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor.
Remember the film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? A driver is riding parallel to him and honking their horn saying, you're going the wrong way. And Candy and Steve Martin go, ha, 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 how do they know where we're headed? Congress and the administration are saying, this is what we're going to do for our budget. But at the end of the day, the Congressional Budget Office basically said that bill is going to create another $3.8 trillion in debt over the next 10 years.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller joins me to talk new movies. Then producer, director, editor, and Wisconsinology founder Frank Anderson joins the show. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Angela, and I am filling in for Maggie with my friends Dan Schaefer and Matt Rothschild. And right before the break, we were talking about Dan's piece about how the governor should not seek another term for re-election. And there are some comments, but I think this one is a good place to continue the conversation. Nancy from Madison writes, "We need to continue to support Governor Evers to run for another term. I don't see a Democrat in the wings who would win. It's also unlikely Dems will take the Assembly or Senate. Evers has been the only one to stop the Republicans. He has the support of those in the center and independent. We don't want Hovde Voss or Walker again as governor." What say you, Dan?
There's a lot there, and I think I welcome this kind of criticism, because I think that we need to be having this conversation. Yeah. Because, I mean, just look at where we are. Look at what just happened last year with Biden dropping out the way that he did. I think there is a real risk involved with running candidates in their mid to late 70s for these important offices like this. And in this moment, you know, we need people who are going to bring the fight to the Trump administration. And I think it was interesting here talking about having the support of the center and independents. What do you think about that aspect of this?
Yeah, because that's why I wanted to read this comment. It was that particular line about he has the support of center and independents. And I don't disagree with that. But my pushback is that what is needed in this moment? We are living, we've been talking all show and numerous shows about we are living in fascism and what is happening in L.A. Do we need, is the solution or the answer to fascism moderates? You know, Darren and I wrote in our piece that this now is not the time to concede to fascism. And I don't know if independent, well, depending on how people identify as independent, but specifically the center and even some Republicans, right? Is that something that we need to meet this moment? And I think it's a very valid question. And I appreciate Nancy for asking it. Because I think it's kind of that iron sharpens irons. We're having this discussion, you know, in public. But I personally don't think if we're living in such extreme times, like this is not even 2016, right? This is now. If we weren't living in such extreme times, I would say, you know, maybe there could be some validity to if that is something we need to continue to do. But I think these times are so drastic and so dire that you need someone with that spirit and that fight to go toe to toe, not necessarily the more moderate folks, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. But my issues with Evers, though, have never really been all that ideological.
Sure.
Like this argument that I'm making in this piece is not one of a lot of like ideological disagreements or policy differences or whatever it is. It really has that's your job. That's right. The main thing that I'm bringing in this argument is the age factor and the how that stymies the next generation of leadership from having the opportunities to move forward, and how that is counterproductive to our democracy. I think of, you know, staying in past the time where you should be in office is its own form of small d democratic undoing as well. And one example that I brought forth in the piece that, you know, I did my research on this one, and I looked at past examples to, you know, when people might have passed the torch. And so in May of 2011, the late Herb Kohl was 76 years old when he announced he'd be retiring at the end of his term. So this was coming right off of the 2010 midterms when the Democrats got absolutely washed, and Scott Walker won, and Ron Johnson won, and the Republicans won a trifecta. So that, you know, that seat was far from certain to be held by a Democrat at that time in the 2012 election. But the quote here from Herb Kohl at the news conference announcing his retirement was this, quote, "The office doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the people of Wisconsin, and there is something to be said for not staying in office too long." So, does Tony Evers want his legacy to be more like that of Herb Kohl, who retired at the right time, passed the torch to Tammy Baldwin, and got to spend his golden years riding shotgun
saw that picture.
in the car leading the Bucks championship parade?
Yeah.
Or do you want your golden years to be spent dodging questions about whether or not you were mentally competent while in office,
sure.
whether or not you're covering that up, and whether that contributed to the rise of fascism in America.
Yeah.
Whose legacy would you rather have? These are the two paths I see to a certain extent right now. There is the Herb Kohl path of retiring at the right time, and there's the Joe Biden path of staying on way too long and ignoring all of the criticism to uphold whatever level of personal glory that Biden wanted to be reelected, right? And so I think that is a really important part of this, too. So, like, I think heed the words of the late Senator Herb Kohl.
I will also say that you've also said that, you know, we talked about there's a Venn diagram, you know, Tony Evers is not Joe Biden, right? Like, there's some overlap, there's some similarities there. You know, but I see a text from Wes from Middleton, Evers is the man, Tony Evers is not Joe Biden, which I think is fair. But I think a lot of times people were wondering, can Joe Biden win, right? Because there was all these challenges happening. My question to you, and maybe it's a little bit of a loaded question, if the governor decides to run for another term, do you think he could win?
I think he could.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he could. And I think, you know, he'd probably be the favorite, especially considering the field of Republicans that are putting together. That's another part of why I think, you know, the Democrats shouldn't be so afraid to pass the torch, because look at who they might be up against right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think this could backfire.
Yeah,
it could backfire because, look, there's a lot of risk involved when you are in your mid 70s. Like, there's a reason this is generally considered retirement age.
Yeah.
And I think Democrats, you know, this is a problem for Republicans, too.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is also too old to be president.
Absolutely.
He is the oldest person ever elected president. So there are also these problems with that, too. But this has been so much more of a pronounced problem for Democrats and those on the left. I think you look back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg not retiring when she should have right after President Barack Obama was reelected.
Yeah.
And another statistic here that I have in the piece, 8 members of Congress have died in office since November 2022, including 3 who have died in office since November's elections. All Democrats, by the way. This has been a massive, inescapable problem for the party. And until somebody like Tony Evers, somebody when it is a genuine question, makes the decision of saying, yes, I'm going to pass the torch, I'm going to step aside when the time is right, then I think they are going to keep confronting this problem over and over and over again. And we see in Wisconsin how what happens here can have national ramifications.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing for, like, 80-year-old Dick Durbin in a safe blue seat in Illinois to retire.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
another thing when you have a fairly popular purple state governor when it really honestly could go either way.
Yeah.
But I think Democrats need to recognize the credibility problem that the Joe Biden's 2024 really brought them. And I think they need to address this head on. And I think no better way to do that than to actually take action and say, yep, it's time for me to step aside. I've served the state well. It's time for a new generation.
I think that's a good point. We have a couple calls. Let's go to Wisco Paul.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I, for one, think Tony's done a great job as a governor, but it's time to pass the torch. And for one, the current lieutenant governor is an awesome person. I've met her a couple of times, and in fact, I'll meet her this weekend at the Democratic convention. So, You need to get younger people involved in politics and let them carry the or let them show the way. That's just my opinion. So, yeah, heaven forbid we have another Joe Biden. That's scary. Thank you,
Wisco Paul. I think that's a helpful. You know, I was wondering how folks would kind of feel, right? There are some folks that are like, you're trashing the governor. It's like, actually, you know, and this is not just a shameless plug for the recombobulation area, but I do say that everybody should take the time to read Dan's piece, because what I will say, no matter where you fall on the argument one way or another, I believe that this piece is incredibly fair. It's not like, hey, this man's old and it's just this ageist, you know, piece of writing. It's not that. I think there's some very legitimate things that I think some folks have been kind of whispering about. But then there's also some points of like, oh, I didn't really think about that. But I encourage folks to kind of check it out and to kind of make their own assumptions for it.
And then to Wisco Paul's point there about the, you know, the potential people who would run, you know, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez is on that short list of potential candidates. The list that I ran through in the piece there, Attorney General Josh Call, State Senator Kel DeRoyes, WISDEM's Chair Ben Wickler, Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, and then also the Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, there have been times in the past where I don't think Democrats have had the best bench necessarily.
Sure.
I don't think that's necessarily the case now. I think these are a lot of qualified candidates. And again, I may have, there may be people on this list that I would favor over others.
But even if you don't like them, those are good, that's a good field.
Sure. Right. You got, and I'm sure there would be way more candidates who would jump into the mix too.
Absolutely.
But I also think like it's going to be up to the voters to decide. Like
sure.
Until it goes from the hypothetical to the reality, we really don't know what kind of message, you know, certain candidates might be bringing. We don't know what people are going to want to say.
Yeah.
You know, just like think back to the kind of VP sweepstakes last year. Like I loved when Tim Walz got into the mix. I ended up being a very big Tim Walz fan in the process.
Me too.
But like, until you're actually out there campaigning and having a message, you don't know really how that's going to connect.
Yeah. Matt, what do you think about all of this?
Well, number one, I think Evers should announce soon. I think, you know, the longer he waits, the more he does a disservice to the other candidates who may be considering. It just freezes the whole thing up. I'm all about, passing the torch to a new generation. I do think the Democrats nationally have become sclerotic. I mean, Chuck Schumer's got to go. And, you know, they deprived AOC of a chairmanship of an important committee because there was an old person who had terminal cancer, and they didn't want to deprive that person of the ability to run the committee for a couple months before he died. That's just a ridiculous reason. I mean, I get the humanity of it, but, you know, this isn't, you know, that's not what it's about. You know,
it's not about whose turn it is.
You can be nice to the person who's got terminal cancer, but don't give the person just a title for 3 months because he's got terminal cancer. That's ridiculous. Pass the torch on. Let's get some new blood, some new leadership. And so I see that. I mean, Governor Evers has been a really good governor. He just supported a letter by other Democratic governors opposing Trump's move in California, saying how outrageous it was. Well, I applaud him for that.
A lot of letters and lawsuits. And I, you're right. He's been doing the work there.
But yeah, I mean, I'm all for opening the process up and getting new candidates in there. And there's no sin against running against an incumbent either. I mean, even if he says he wants to run, you know, the other candidates could run too, with the possible exception of the lieutenant governor would be in a tough spot.
Yeah. That'd be slightly awkward, just a little bit.
Yeah. I do wonder if somebody would, you know, just consider challenging him in a primary at all. Even just like in a Dean Phillips way. Remember Dean Phillips?
Who
ran against Biden saying the entirely vindicated argument of Dean Phillips.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Forgot about that whole
period.
Yeah,
he looks good today.
Yeah.
More on this when we come back. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. We've been having a really great discussion so far. And unfortunately, only got a couple minutes left, but tune in and we will pick this up on the other side.
Family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, backed by Donald Trump, that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation area. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
The soap scientists have found a way to incorporate Sydney Sweeney's actual bathwater into the soap. What if she doesn't smell good? I know she's beautiful.
What if it smells terrible?
What if she stinks? And no one is going to tell her that because she's Sydney Sweeney. Here's an open invitation to Sydney Sweeney. Come by the Nightlight Studios. I'll smell you and let you know if this is a good product.
Maybe drop off, you know.
And give us a few bucks. Yeah.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
State Representative Christian Phelps.
As somebody who's in my first term in the legislature, one of the striking things is how seldom the majority party speaks with us. I don't know how many of my colleagues personally feel LGBTQ people don't deserve freedom, but that's kind of irrelevant at the end of the day. They've already spent a number of days attacking trans people because those are days they don't have to spend defending their very unpopular economic agenda.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. For free, find a mentor today at score.org.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
As Wisconsin's summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Angela, and I'm filling in for Maggie, joined by my friends Dan Schaefer and Matt Rothschild. We've been having big discussions. Shout out to State Representative Darren Madison for joining in on the discussion. Obviously, thank you both for joining me, because this is always my favorite if I'm ever on the radio. And we've been having a really good discussion about Dan's piece, latest piece that dropped today in the recombobulation area, and having a lively discussion about if the governor should run for a third term or not. And I want to be able just to pull a couple of you all's feedback and some of your text messages. Jake from Madison said, "I get Dan's argument, and I do not think anyone has a job for life, but Evers is arguably the most popular politician in the state. That's why this is different than Biden and his 40% approval rating. Losing is not an option for Dems in the Govs race. Evers seems to be the best chance of keeping the governorship and stopping fascism." I think that last line is particularly, you know, compelling. I think that's a legit argument.
It's been it's a valid point.
Yeah,
it absolutely is. And that's why we want to have these conversations. And you know, Ben Wickler told me in a recent interview that we did that he said Evers' veto pin has been, quote, one of the most important collections of atoms in the world in defense of democracy in this state.
And it's true.
And I wholeheartedly agree. And he's served this state well. But at a certain point, I think you risk undoing pieces of that legacy, pieces of being, you know, that most popular politician in the state, which, again, I'll quick aside on that. Most popular politician in the state means his net approval rating is like plus one.
Yeah.
Because every politician in the state has an underwater, deeply negative approval rating.
No one likes politicians.
So let's at least caveat that a little bit.
Fair. Lori and Shano says, "The odd difference between the Democrats and Republicans is that Democrats call out the problems within the party, but the Republicans reelect a liar and make a hero out of an old man, Reagan. The Republicans keep winning elections with their lying and corrupt politicians. So should we keep attacking our own people instead of just going after the other side?"
Again, another valid point.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we just saw last week Donald Trump and Elon Musk going after each other.
Yeah.
So I think Republicans do, you know, have these types of conversations on their side, too. And I think this is it's also a conversation we need to be having. I think the fact that Democrats sometimes ignore these conversations.
Agreed. Yeah.
And will sweep things under the rug. And I think we saw that with Biden. It was just like, it'll be fine. Yeah, State of the Union was pretty good. Oh, this is going to go well. And all of a sudden he's delivering the worst debate performance in the history of debate performances.
And even after that, the next morning I posted, you know, Joe must go on Facebook.
Yeah.
And some Democrats called me a traitor and said I was on Team Trump.
Yeah.
We can't be that much just in the tank for whoever is the putative candidate.
Yeah. And I want to bring this back to kind of a full circle moment of like, these are robust conversations. These are important conversations that we should be having. But no matter where you feel on if the governor should run again, what we also need to acknowledge is that there is a real big moment that we all need to meet, whether it's the Democratic Party chair that will be elected this weekend, or it is it's if the governor should run for another election. There are real moments to figure out what is our leadership doing in this moment. Mm-hmm. And while we can wonder and push what our leadership is doing, there is also an opportunity for all of us to make sure that we're speaking out and using our platforms and showing up. And so I want to, in this last couple minutes that we have left, is to play a acceptance speech from the BET Awards from Doechii.
I do want to address what's happening right now outside of the building. There are ruthless attacks that are creating fear and chaos in our communities in the name of law and order. Trump is using military forces to stop a protest. And I want y'all to consider what kind of government it appears to be when every time we exercise our democratic right to protest, the military is deployed against us. What type of government is that? People are being swept up and torn from their families, and I feel it's my responsibility as an artist to use this moment to speak up for all oppressed people. For black people, for Latino people, for trans people, for the people in Gaza. We all deserve to live in hope and not in fear. And I hope we stand together, my brothers and my sisters, against hate, and we protest against it. Thank you, BET.
I wanted to play that because, one, I think it was really powerful. And
absolutely.
Two, it's meeting the moment. Like, here she is getting an award, but like she can't avoid what's happening. And I wanted to kind of just like end with us kind of like regrounded in this moment that, yes, there's really important discussions and dialogues and points of tension or, you know, controversy, depending how people fall on some of these issues. But at the end of the day, there are real things that are happening right here, right now. And people are like, you're being divisive. You know, why are we eating our own as Dems? Or, you know, this is happening. I am a firm believer we can walk and chew gum. That's part of what my personal job is all the time. I have to hold Democrats accountable, which can be difficult. And then I got to deal with Republicans at the same time. Mm-hmm. Organizers have learned to walk and chew gum. And I think it's time for the Democratic Party to also do the same. We can have both conversations at the same time. We can talk about what's happening in LA. We can talk about how we need to respond in this moment. But we can also be critical of what we want to see in leadership as they continue to meet this moment.
Mm-hmm. And just, you know, right outside, not too far from where we are, too, there's a protest planned.
Yeah.
In Milwaukee at Cathedral Square Park. You know, I don't know exactly what's going to be happening there, but I think tensions are high and I think it's going to be important to follow and watch what exactly is going on with that. What's going on with the No Kings protests that are happening this weekend? What's going on with in LA?
Yeah.
And you know, like Doechii said, use your platform for good.
Yeah. And I think all of us have our own platforms and figuring out how we use them is important. Matt, you get the last word. What do you got?
Yeah, we all need to stand up. We all need to use our voices, whether it's, you know, just on Facebook or with our neighbors, friends, and family, or if we have bigger platforms, we got to use them. This is the time.
You have been listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. I've been Angela. We've had Dan and Matt, and shout out to State Rep Darren Madison. Thank you to Maggie for entrusting us with your show. And thank you to the callers and everyone that sent messages and texted and added to this conversation. We appreciate you all. And until the next time.
Bucks and six.
This-
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. A fifth day of protests in Los Angeles over federal immigration raids, along with President Trump's decision to send more federal troops to help quell violence. At the White House earlier, the president defending the deployment.
If we didn't send in the National Guard quickly, right now, Los Angeles would be burning to the ground.
LA's mayor condemning the violence, but says local police have not requested more help. Here's Karen Bass.
The unrest that has happened are a few blocks within the downtown area. It is not all of downtown, and it is not all of the city.
California's governor now asking a federal judge to stop the troop deployment. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. terminated all members of the CDC's Vaccine Advisory Committee yesterday. He tells ABC News now that the replacements will not be, quote, anti-vaxxers. Some CDC workers staged a protest walkout today. Russia continued its aerial attacks in Ukraine. At least three died today. This is ABC News.